Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series 4 of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. For now though, sit back, relax, and let's take things from here. This week, I am joined by Ross Tyker. Ross is the CEO and founder at Syntellant. Ross, welcome to the show. I've given you a quick intro there, but I guess for our audience's benefit, if you can perhaps, in your own words, give us a very quick overview as to yourself and the business in terms of what you do.
Sure. Thanks for having me on your podcast, James. I am the founder of Syntellant Bioscience. We are a contract research organization. We are not a clinical contract research organization like many of your other guests on your podcast, but we are in fact a preclinical contract research organization and focus primarily on drug discovery.
Uh-huh.
So we do laboratory research on behalf of biotech and pharmaceutical clients. Our specialty has been high content imaging and other forms of automated microscopy for drug discovery.
Yeah.
But we really can do pretty much anything in vitro biology related to drug discovery. And we are expanding our services to include a lot of the IND enabling preclinical testing, and are through partnering and subcontracts can really provide just about anything from the beginning of a drug discovery program through to an IND application.
Okay, cool. Well, look, thanks very much for the quick overview there. And look, I note that you have been the founder of the company since 2017. Look, pre those days, and if we were to, rewind right back as to how you got into the industry, what's your background? What's your backstory? How did you end up falling into, this space?
Yeah, I suppose it could be kind of a long story. I'll try to make it short. So I was one of those students who went to college not really knowing what I wanted to do. I did an MBA right out of college, which people rarely do anymore.
Yeah.
Still not knowing exactly what I wanted to do, but it seemed like a safe path.
Mm-hmm.
My younger brother died of cancer, of medulloblastoma, a brain cancer.
Oh, wow.
While I was in my MBA program. And that really changed my thinking about a lot of things. I didn't immediately change my path. I went to work for Intel Corporation, the computer chip company,
yep. Mm-hmm.
In Northern California. But I felt kind of like a cog in a wheel there. It was such a big company, and I was not an engineer. I really got thinking about what would be more meaningful for me in my life. And I decided I would go back to school. To do a PhD in biology,
mm-hmm.
Molecular and cellular biology. And I wanted to really make an impact on treating and even curing diseases.
Yeah.
So after my 5 years at Intel, that's what I did. I went back to school and,
mm-hmm.
and did a PhD, and I ended up working for a time at Vertex Pharmaceuticals as a research scientist, and then later went back and took a research faculty position at the University of Utah.
Mm.
But in neither case did I really feel like I had the freedom to pursue my own ideas in the way that I wanted to really make a difference, and just ultimately decided to pull the trigger and start this business.
Wow.
My goal is really, has always been to make preclinical drug discovery much more predictive of clinical outcomes. And that's still our goal as a company.
Okay, very interesting. And look, I guess for those tuning in, as you rightly highlighted, look, you're a preclinical CRO. Typically on the show, we've had clinical CROs. What is the big difference in terms of daily activities, functions, outputs, etc.?
You're asking what is the difference between a preclinical and a clinical CRO?
Yeah, I guess, or you know, and in terms of say the roles and responsibilities that people do in your organization to, compared to how that may differ at a clinical CRO.
Yeah, I cannot speak to a clinical CRO really because I have no experience there, but of course they are managing clinical trials. We are doing laboratory research on behalf of biotech and pharmaceutical companies. In some cases, it's research they could do in-house in their own labs, but they choose to outsource it. Maybe because they don't want to purchase specialized equipment or develop the expertise in-house, or they just feel like we could do it better. But we are doing work that they outsource to us for their drug discovery projects. So really my team, they're laboratory scientists primarily. And we are doing the work that the clients ask us to do, that to move their programs towards the clinic.
Fine. Okay. No, that gives us a good overview there. And look, you talked about, I guess, the sad death of your younger brother. And it seems as though that has perhaps, driven you into this field. Do you remember the specific moment? Because obviously there was some time between that and you deciding to launch the business. And you said that, you worked for Vertex and then, kind of it's progressed from there. Do you recall what it was like when you started and you said, you know what, that's it, I'm handing in my notice, I'm going to go and do this? Or were you kind of juggling the idea as a side gig to start with? How did you start out, I guess? What did it look like right at the very, very beginning?
It was a bit of a side gig at first. So you mentioned that I started it in 2017. I stayed at the University of Utah half-time until the middle of 2019. So I was trying to just get it off the ground just by myself. And I really had a hard time juggling both things. I did get just a little bit of contract research. And at first I thought, hey, this is kind of enjoyable. At the university, I had a lot of responsibilities and it was often chaotic. And to just go into a lab and work by myself on behalf of a client was kind of nice at first. But then I just realized I couldn't continue to juggle both things. And finally, in the middle of 2019, just decided to pursue the business full time and resigned from the University of Utah at that point.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And look, how did you, I guess, in those early days then, whether it was when you were juggling it alongside the University of Utah or come 2019 when you went all in, how did you go about winning business? So I guess for anyone else who is, deliberating about following in your footsteps, perhaps, how did you go about winning the business? Was it through connections? Was it, using certain websites? Was it, direct approaches to organizations that you felt could benefit from your services or that had problems you could solve? How did you go about that bit? Because often you said it yourself, launching it and getting it going is often the toughest part, isn't it?
Certainly. Yeah, it was definitely through connections. I think it would be hard to start this type of business without a network. I have a friend who was and is a vice president of a pharmaceutical company, and he gave me my first project.
Nice.
So, I think I did a reasonably good job there, and he recommended me to somebody else who was just starting a biotech company, and so they became a second client. And really, we just grew by word of mouth for
nice.
A long time.
I guess, yeah, do a good job. I mean, it's like anything in life, isn't it? You do a good job, people speak to people, they ask if there's anyone you can recommend, and it just slowly starts to snowball. So I asked her, you know, I asked her about, you know, how you got going, because you know, often I have our audience reaching out saying, oh, this story was inspiration or that story was inspiration for them. But what about yourself? I mean, did you have any particular mentors or individuals, aside from your friend who was at the VP, of course, that landed you that first gig? Was there any specific mentors that you looked up to at the time that kind of guided your path in any way?
Well, I certainly had mentors all along the way. I think in terms of starting this business, it was really kind of on my own. I mean, it was kind of a departure from much of what I'd done in the past. I mean, there were things that happened along the way that kind of sparked ideas that I finally put together in trying to start this business. I mean, some good, some bad. I remember at Vertex Pharmaceuticals developing radioligand binding assays with my arms around a lead shield and thinking, this is not the approach I want to take. You know, having my thyroid scanned for how much radioactive iodine it had taken up every few months. And I knew I didn't want to do that long term. When I went back to the University of Utah, I was developing certain types of imaging assays, calcium imaging for neuroscience. And these were, you know, functional kinds of imaging assays. And I just got thinking about what types of drug discovery assays I thought would be most predictive of human clinical outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, it was really kind of my own ideas then to move this imaging platform forward that I had in mind. It's something I still very much believe in. You know, I ask myself all the time, why do 90% of drugs still fail in human clinical trials? And I think we are, by and large, advancing the wrong compounds. You know, we've not done the right kind of testing to predict clinical outcomes, whether it be in terms of therapeutic efficacy of the drugs or toxicity or bioavailability or what have you. We're really not doing a good job preclinically. So it's still my passion to develop assays that will be predictive. I see the industry going towards complex human cell models, partly because of scientific reasons and also societal reasons. We're seeing restrictions on animal testing that I think we're going to only increase in terms of the restrictions. I think the animal models have not been highly predictive of clinical outcomes. And there's a big push to create complex human cell models, including things like 3D organoids and cell cultures and iPSC-derived cell types and so forth, that I think have the potential to better predict clinical outcomes. And the best way to interrogate all those models is going to be imaging with advanced image analysis. So,
okay.
So is really that trying to position my company for that.
Yeah. So is that the main focus of Scintillant then? It's the imaging to assist with the drug development process. Is that correct? Am I getting you right there? Or
yes, it's not the only thing that we do, but it is certainly a heavy emphasis.
Yeah, sure. I mentioned the name there, Scintillant. It's one that I struggle with, I've got to say. But where did that come from? I'm always interested to know where the name came up. I mean, you said that, you know, the idea was just your own. It's kind of at the beginning, it was clearly yourself. Where did anyone help with the name, inspire the name? Or is that, you know, all you as well, Russ?
Yeah. Well, the name, I think Scintillant refers to emitting sparks or flashes of light. So right. For me, it was a metaphor for the moment of discovery. Mm-hmm. It also, I think, It has to do with the fluorescence imaging that we do, fluorescence microscopy. So it just seemed like a good name for what we were trying to develop.
Okay, so I can see the theme there. I can see the theme. That's good. So that's kind of how things looked early days. There was some work at the university. There was yourself, plugging away at things, coming up with a lot of the ideas. What was the biggest challenge at that point? You know, you said kind of getting the first client that then rolled to the next client, and it was a lot of word of mouth. But what were the biggest challenges that you faced in those early years and in making that transition from kind of a part-time kind of side gig to going full-time? What was the most difficult part of that?
Well, I think because we are a service-based business, we were not developing our own IP. So really it was me bootstrapping this company rather than raising a lot of capital. So that's been a challenge. But I think, aside from that, I hired my first two employees in January of 2020, right when COVID hit.
I was going to say, so that was
the timing of that was kind of difficult.
Yeah.
And we had some research contracts lined up. So at first it felt like we would sail right through it.
Mm.
But, a few months into the COVID pandemic, a number of our clients just cut us off.
And
we had one pharma client in the oncology space who said, well, because of the pandemic, all of our clinical trials are on hold. Mm. So we are curtailing all of our preclinical testing as well. Uh-huh. I was suddenly scrambling to find new clients and told my employees, hey, if I can't find new business, I may have to let you go. I don't want to do that. And we made it through, but that was quite challenging.
I can imagine it was the same for us. Had a big pipeline of deals waiting to happen, contracts signed, and then just one by one, they were just falling off the side of the cliff. And it was like every day I would come in and your heart would almost sink just to be like, oh, there goes another. But I guess, look, it sounds like you were transparent with your team and how you managed that. But I guess it was tough for any business leader at that time. How did you then come out the other side? I mean, look, if you were to give us a snapshot of things, a couple of years down the line, you've got through COVID. How do things look now if you were to paint kind of an up-to-date picture of things?
Yeah, I think things look better for us. I've hired additional employees. I think we have a good team.
Mm.
We're growing. We've had some successes. So the second client that I mentioned that was referred to us by our first client,
yeah,
we helped them in just a period of 2 years advance one of their drug discovery programs, really from concept all the way to clinical trial in 2 years. And I believe our work for them was really quite pivotal for putting that drug into clinical trials. It's now completed a phase one and it looks really good. So that looking back is a real milestone and accomplishment for us that we're proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another drug discovery program we've worked on quite a bit for another client, especially helping them with their lead optimization, where I believe they'll put a compound into clinical trials next year.
Wow. So would you say that they're probably the two biggest milestones or achievements since starting the business? Just to have that tangible success must feel good. But I mean, you tell me, is there anything else that has topped that along the way, Russ?
No, I don't think so. And those are really meaningful accomplishments to me. I mean, I spent many years in academia writing papers, but I always ask myself, is somebody's life better because of these papers?
At
least when we're putting a drug into clinical trials, there's the potential that somebody's life could be a lot better because of work that we did. So that keeps me motivated, and I just want to have a lot more successes like that on behalf of our clients and on behalf of patients.
Yeah.
We really need life-saving medications.
Awesome stuff. And in terms of, I guess, the current setup, I mean, talking about like some of these success stories there is one thing. I mean, how does it look now? Are you, I mean, how big's the team? Are you now office-based? Are you remote? I mean, just the way that people work in general seems to have changed a lot in the last couple of years. How does the setup look in terms of that for yourselves now?
Yeah, we're still all on site, primarily because we're just a team of laboratory scientists and myself. We're still a small team. I mean, we will grow, but I don't think we need to become enormous. I mean, there's some very big preclinical CROs out there. I'd rather be more like an elite team of special forces than a giant army. I think that we can do top quality work if we are organizing ourselves in that way. And I believe that that's really critical to me, is to know that the data that we're providing our clients is top quality, is really moving the right drugs to the right patients in the clinic.
And is that, I imagine then one of your unique selling points for your client base is just that attention to detail, having a small team of experts who are specialists, rather than, as you title it, kind of an army of people just knocking out loads of work. It's that personalized approach and quality. Is that typically why clients come to you or refer you to you know, other partners and clients?
I believe so, yes. We do have some testimonials from clients, and they've mentioned those things. I believe they like the quality of our work. They trust it. We usually are able to do the work quickly and very timely. Other CROs will often put them off 2 or 3 months based on being booked out that, you know, for that period of time. And we communicate with our clients regularly, and they know they can call me or anyone on my team at any time. So I think they're very happy to have that kind of communication that really helps move things along. We're not just, you know, writing a statement of work, doing the work, and then sending the data to them without consulting and helping them understand what it is and our recommendations for next steps and so forth. So I think they appreciate all of that.
Sure. So I get the sense then, Russ, if you're, you know, still a point of contact for clients, which I'm sure they love, are you still, as much as it's you're the founder, you're still very much involved with the hands-on day-to-day lab operations effectively? Is that a fair assessment? Or
it is, and I know we will grow to a point where that's not really possible. I would hope that I can at least develop people on my team who make clients feel just as comfortable, right? That they really know their stuff. They can go to them. They'll have that same hands-on approach from us. So that's my goal in developing a team.
Quick one on that. I mean, do you think that you'll miss that? Because I think it's almost like this company of yours is like almost a personal project, or it certainly feels that way to me. Do you think that you'll miss that element of being kind of in the thick of things, really?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes. I doubt that I will let go of client interactions entirely, even if we get quite a bit bigger. I think one of the things I really like about running a CRO is that you really get to see a little bit of everything that's going on in the industry. And I think it's a great education. It's really important to learn how different companies are approaching their drug discovery projects, and understand what they're doing that's both good and bad. And I believe that I don't want to let that go entirely. So I think I would miss it if I had to. Yes.
Sure. Well, I mean, you're not at that point just yet, but I guess a few years have passed since starting the business. Things have clearly changed a little. You've weathered COVID for one. What would you say you've learned about yourself or business operations throughout this journey? There's not, I know for me, I've picked up too many lessons. Some of them I wish that I didn't need to learn, but I've been there and done that now. What about yourself?
Yeah. There's a lot. I think I've learned that I'm more of a risk taker than I thought I was.
Right.
I think early in my career, I was trying to carve out a very safe and secure path, but it wasn't one where I found a lot of joy or a higher purpose.
What do you think changed there then? Was there anything that you think made you, change from being kind of comfort zone safety to actually I'm going to start a business, I'm going to take the risk?
I don't think it was just one thing. I believe there were several things. I mean, having a brother die of cancer was certainly one of those things. Mm. As I mentioned, working at Vertex with my arms around a lead shield every day, developing radio ligand binding assays made me realize, even if this is a safe path, it's not one I want. And had some similar experiences at the university that just all culminated in this path.
Yeah, that's all very, very fair. And look, I guess moving forward as a business, as you say, that it's probably inevitable that you are going to get dragged from the role that you're able to take up at the moment. That just happens as you grow, I guess. What are the plans for you? Because it seems to me that you'd be actually quite happy if you could stay involved with that part. So, and I mean, you said yourself that you don't want to grow into a huge army, but what are your plans in terms of expansion, innovation? What's next for you in the business, I guess?
Yeah, as I look back on where we've had the greatest impact, it was with clients where we had a certain trust, where we could just iterate quickly on results. And they let us try things that maybe we didn't even have a lot of experience with. Mm. So we were helping them from the beginning of their program all the way through an IND application. And I want to do more of that. So much of what CROs do in our space is transactional. Clients will go to a CRO and say, oh, I need this experiment done. Mm-hmm. And you write a statement of work and you write a study report at the end. And you're always kind of bogged down in paperwork just to do maybe what amounts to one experiment.
Right.
And I think for us to grow, we can't just be transactional. We really need to be a drug discovery partner to our clients. So I'm trying to build out more capabilities in our company where we can do really anything and everything from the beginning of a drug discovery program all the way to the clinic. Mm-hmm. And we won't build that all out overnight, but we're doing some of it through partnering. I mean, we've already found a chemistry partner. Not that our clients would have to use them, but that's available to them.
Yeah.
We're expanding our capabilities in-house, as I mentioned, to do more of the IND enabling preclinical work, which is not something we've done in the past. So I think our expansion plans involve selling a larger program to our clients that will be of higher value to them.
Sure. Well, it'll be good to see how that all goes ahead as time goes on. And I know that you and I are now connected on LinkedIn, so I'll be able to tune in to what's going on there. And perhaps get you back on the show at some point down the line. But look, for now, I just want to say thanks very much for sharing your story. And before I do let you go, look, we always end the show with a quick fire questions round. So if you can humor me with some of these, that would be appreciated. And my first question, Russ, would be about perhaps the one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self.
Yeah, I believe I would tell my younger self, there are really no guarantees in life, so be bolder and pursue your dreams. And don't worry about failing, your failures will become stepping stones along the way, learning experiences. It's not the greatest thing in the world to carve out a safe path that brings you no joy if you find no higher purpose in that path. So I think that's the advice I've given yourself.
I like it, Russ. Very deep there, very deep, but yeah, very, very wise words. And look, I guess aside from the Huxley Morton podcast, which you may well start tuning into now that you've been a guest, what would you list as perhaps the number one book that you've read, podcast you've listened to, resource in general, or website that you would recommend for our audience as, you know, kind of life sciences, clinical research, drug discovery professionals?
Well, I'm not sure if this is exactly what you have in mind, but I really like biographies because I like to learn the events that shaped the arc of a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Walter Isaacson's biographies. Some that I've read were Steve Jobs, Albert Einstein, Ben Franklin.
Right.
And those were all people who were either working at the interface of art and science or in some way pursued both. They were very broad thinkers. And I'd like to think of myself as kind of working at the interface of art and science. I mean, our imaging, I think the cell images are beautiful, but I also find that if we can see what a drug is doing, how it's moving biology in the context of a living cell and actually visualize that, I find that very compelling scientifically as well. So I recommend biographies. I think you learn a lot about yourself from reading them.
Cool. If I pushed you for your favorite one of those that you mentioned, so Franklin, Jobs, etc., is there one that really stood out for you? I think the only one that I've seen is the Steve Jobs one or listened to. What was your top one?
That one, because it feels like, I guess it's the most modern, maybe I see the most applications for my own life.
So yeah.
Maybe the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs.
Cool. As I said, the Jobs one is the only one I've experienced, but very much agree. And I do like a good biography myself. And look, we talked earlier about, you know, taking on a couple of people just probably a month before the height of COVID got announced and global lockdowns were, you know, brought into place. What qualities, I guess, did they have? But more importantly, what are the top three qualities you value most, Russ, when putting together your team of specialists, as you label them?
Yeah, I would say the first thing I look for is a commitment to excellence and top quality work.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in a business like ours, I think that's really critical. Second, I would say integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, another essential in scientific research. And then third would just be a passion for what we do. I think if people feel as passionately about it as I do, you know, they'll help us get where we need to go and help our clients to be successful in their drug discovery programs.
Definitely. And it's always useful to have people that enjoy the work they do as well. No one wants to be stuck in a lab or stuck anywhere with someone who is bored to death just there for a paycheck. So no, I'm with you on that one. And look, we talk a lot about work on this show. It's, you know, well, I guess that's the whole thing. It's almost a biography. It's that personal and professional story. But behind, you know, the science, behind the business, what do you like to get up to outside of work, Russ? You know, how do you relax? What's your favorite thing outside of work?
Oh, I don't have a lot of time for anything other than family. I really enjoy spending time with my family.
Yeah.
My wife has probably been more supportive of this winding path through life that I've taken than I could reasonably expect her to have been. And I have four children who are great. When I get a chance to take my kids snow skiing, that's something that we we like to do together.
Nice. Four kids, Russ. That must. I mean, I'm running a business. That that must keep you busy. That's all I can say. I've got two now, as highlighted. But yeah, that certainly keeps you on your toes. And look, finally, and to close the show, what would you list as your number one golden rule for both life and business, if you were to wrap that up in a package?
Yeah, I would say be fair to everyone. And I know that sounds a lot like the golden rule we memorized when we were kids, but I believe it. You know, I think if I, for example, if in hiring employees, I were to discriminate on anything other than those three qualities that I gave you, you know, commitment to excellence, integrity, and passion for what we do, I might be unfair to people. I don't believe I should discriminate on the basis of race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, anything like that. That would be unfair. And I guess I'd like to believe I have an innate sense of fairness in the way I treat my employees, our clients, our vendors, just anyone we work with. I think it's a critically important thing to do.
It must certainly be working, Russ, as you say. If you're picking up business and client off the back of referrals, then you're certainly doing something that is fair to those that are working with you. So, look, thank you very much for joining me on the show. I guess I know that I think originally reached out to you via LinkedIn, but for anyone interested to learn more about you, the business, or you know, potential clients, etc., what's the best way to reach out to you or learn more about the company?
Yeah, so certainly feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. As far as I can tell, I think I'm the only Russ Teichert on LinkedIn. You could go to our website, which is scintillantbioscience.com. We also have a LinkedIn presence for Scintillant Bioscience, so feel free to follow us there. We'd be happy to speak with any of your listeners.
Fantastic stuff. Well, look, Russ, thanks again for being part of the Huxley Morton podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, James. It's been a pleasure for me as well. Have a great day.